Good morning, and welcome to the Mexican Ministry Finance Conference Call on the Public Finance and Public Debts Report for the first quarter of 2007. With us today are Alejandro Werner, Undersecretary of Finance, Gerardo Rodriguez, Head of Public Debt Unit, and Miguel Mesmarquez, Head of the Economic Planning. You may begin.
Thank you very much, and welcome to the Mexican Ministry of Finance Conference Call on the first quarter report on public finances and public debt. And let me talk a little bit about how, first of all, the economy has been doing during the first quarter, then turn over to public finances, and then talk at the end about debt management throughout the first quarter. During the first quarter of 2007, there was a slowdown in the rate of economic growth following the slowdown that we saw in the U.S., and basically, when you look at the components of GDP, we saw the industrial sector having a very important deceleration, services maintaining a relatively good rate of growth throughout the quarter, and the agricultural sector with a relatively decent rate of growth as well. So basically, the slowdown in the Mexican economy during the first quarter of the year is due to the slowdown in industrial activity in the U.S., plus an important slowdown in the automobile production in Mexico, in addition to whatever might have happened in the U.S. In these sectors. I mean, just going over some numbers, in the first 2 months of the year, the IGAI grew by 2.8% at an annual rate. Industrial production grew at an annual rate slightly smaller than 1 percentage point, and services grew at a rate of almost 4%, basically signaling what I just described as the main trends of economic growth during the first quarter. When you look at the main components of aggregate demand, consumption, or at least the indicators that we have on consumption, have been showing a relatively decent behavior during the first quarter. When you look at retail sales by ANTAD and Walmart during the first quarter, they both grew at rates higher than 10 percentage points. When you look at the only numbers that we have regarding investment for the month of January, we have rates of growth of around 7.5%. And when you look at the main determinants of consumption, such as employment, real wages, and credit by the financial system to the private sector, we see that these determinants have been behaving relatively well. I mean, formal employment, and that's jobs created and registered at the Mexican Institute of Social Security, have been growing at an annual rate higher than 6%. Credit to the private sector is growing at around 30% in real terms throughout the quarter, and real wages have been growing at a rate of around 1% in real terms. So basically, with these numbers, what we expect is that the rate of growth for the year will be around 3.3%, and the rate of growth, the annual rate of growth in the first quarter of the year will be around 3%. Basically, we are expecting, following the expected recovery in the U.S. economy in the industrial sector by the second half of the year, an important recovery in this sector in Mexico, and also a stabilization of the decline that we saw in automobile production, and an eventual increase in the second half of the year, and this will give us the 3.3 rate of growth throughout the year. And in the second half of the year, we're expecting an important recovery in the industrial sector. Turning to public finances, in the first quarter of 2007, we had a surplus of around 100 billion pesos. This is significantly higher than the surplus that we had during the same period in 2006. Revenues were up 4.1% in real terms, and it's important to highlight that non-oil tax revenues grew by 10% in real terms, and income tax and VAT increased by 10% in real terms, both of these concepts, continuing the trend of relatively good behavior of the main tax revenues that we saw in 2006. The federal government non-tax revenues increased by 50% in real terms due to higher non-recurring revenues collected during the period. Revenues from public entities under budgetary control, different from Pemex, also had a significant increase of 7.7%. This is basically CFE, the IMSS, the ISSSTE, and Lucy Fuerza del Centro. Oil revenues posted a decrease of 3.5% during the quarter as a result of lower oil production and prices, as well as decreases in prices of natural gas, fuel oil, and other petrochemicals. During the first quarter of 2007, total public budgetary expenditures decreased by 5.1%. This decrease is basically associated to the decline that participations to states experienced during the quarter after a very high increase in the last quarter of 2006. When you look at programmable expenditures, this increased by almost 4% during the first quarter. And when you look at investment foster, what we call inversión impulsada, by the private sector also posted an important decline, and this is basically explained by the fact that this concept experienced a very important increase in the first quarter of 2006 associated with the important push to reconstruct those areas that suffered from the hurricanes at the end of 2005. So basically at the beginning of 2006, we had an important surge in investment associated to this reconstruction, and this is biased in the annual comparisons. But given what was approved in the budget and what is expected to be implemented by the telecommunications ministry, by Pemex, by CFE, we are expecting a year in which foster investment by the public sector will also show a positive rate of growth throughout the year. Turning to public debt, let me say that at the end of the first quarter of 2007, the federal government net debt as a percentage of GDP totaled almost 21%. The division between domestic and external is around 16% for domestic debt and almost 5% for external debt. Therefore, domestic debt represented 77% of total net debt. In terms of the debt composition, the participation of the domestic debt composition, the participation of fixed-rate peso-denominated bonds in total government securities rose from 49.9% at the end of 2006 to 51% at the end of the first quarter of 2007. Also, the average maturity of government domestic securities increased by by around 4 months, from 4.27 years at the end of 2006 to 4.63 years at the end of the first quarter. Turning to the federal public sector net debt, which includes the net debt of the federal government, that of the public entities under direct budgetary control, and that of development banks, this concept reached 21.1% of GDP, slightly lower than the one that was registered at the end of 2006. Within this, domestic debt as a percentage of GDP was around 15.4%, and external debt was around 5.7%. Finally, our broadest concept of debt, that includes all the PDREGAS debt, the IPAP debt, and other adjustments, that is called the historical balance of the public sector borrowing requirements, stood at 35.7% by the end of the first quarter of the year, and this is the level at which we have seen these concepts for the last four quarters. So with this, I finish the highlights of the report, and now I will open up the floor for any questions that you have. Thank you. Yeah. Excuse me. I think we are done with the introductory remarks, so now we open up the floor for any questions that you might have.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Your first question comes from Paul Olim.
Thank you for the availability for the call. My question is, we have seen encouraging progress in the discussions about the fiscal reform. So my question is if you could elaborate a little bit more in terms of what the content and the objective of this fiscal reform would be, and also give a sense of timing for the discussions and approval. Thank you.
Basically, I mean, the fiscal reform will be a broad reform that will incorporate issues regarding, obviously, increasing our public sector revenues that are extremely low at around 11% of GDP when you compare them to other Latin American countries. And basically, as we've shown in our budgetary guidelines presented to Congress at the end of last year, given the pressures that we will be facing in terms of expenditures, we will need an important increase in revenues throughout the sexenio to be able to maintain a balanced budget throughout this administration. So basically there's an important component, or there will be an important component oriented towards strengthening our public sector income base, and also by doing this, significantly reducing our dependency on oil revenues. Second, we will have also important components addressing the structure and the quality of public sector expenditure, trying to generate significant increases in efficiency in public expenditure, and therefore being able to gradually restructure our expenditure composition towards those areas where the social return of this expenditure is higher. Also, it will be important to have another pillar that significantly increases the efficiency of our Internal Revenue Service's job in terms of being much much more able to generate increases in public sector income with the current structure or with the new structure that we will have after the reform. And also it will be important to address the relationship between the Federation and the state in terms of our fiscal dealings. I mean, as you know, most of the states in Mexico get around 90% of their income from the Federation, and therefore the fiscal relationship between the Federation and the states is very important, and the fiscal pressures that the states face eventually become important fiscal pressures for the Federation. So in a sense, it will also be important to address the solvency of the Mexican state, to touch upon the relationship between states and the federal government. So I would say it will be a relatively broad fiscal reform. Obviously, the details will be worked on with Congress throughout the next weeks or months, and obviously the time frame for this reform will be the summer, and the desired deadline would be before the budget for 2008 is submitted to Congress, so that we are able to send a budget that already incorporates whatever changes were approved during this concept of broad fiscal reform, and Congress can concentrate starting in September on analyzing and eventually approving, modifying and eventually approving this budget and income law, but without the interference of having to simultaneously discuss a fiscal reform and then have to modify the proposal of the government according to whatever decision was reached on the fiscal reform. So just to conclude on the time frame, the optimal time frame will be to finish this process by the end of the summer, so that the budget negotiations, or when the budget negotiations start, basically the fiscal reform topic is already addressed and is already incorporated in the program. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. Your next question comes from Gray Newman.
Good morning, Alejandro. Thank you as well for the call. Just one question. If you could maybe just walk us through a bit now that the pension reform at the ISTE level has been approved. What your sense of the cost and I guess sort of the net present value savings from the reform will be? Obviously, we still don't know the level of the acceptance ratio, the number of workers. Let's assume that no worker takes the recognition bond from the existing workforce, or let's assume 50% or 100%. Sort of what the range is in terms of the savings, the net present value that those savings would be, or any other kind of metrics that you could maybe describe in looking at the pension reform from the perspective of the existing workforce. Thank you.
Yeah. Basically, let me give very broad numbers. Basically, all these calculations significantly depend on what assumptions we make regarding GDP growth, real interest rates, etc. And as you said, how many people take the recognition bond or how many people decide to stay within the current system. So, without getting into the details of the calculations, let me be very broad in the numbers. But what we have is that the current system, or the old system, the one that was in place before the reform, had a net present value cost for the public sector that was higher than 50 percentage points of GDP. And with the reform, we will get, I think, a saving that is around 40% of that, so around 20 percentage points of GDP. And from these savings, the savings that are associated to the current generations of workers is relatively small. So basically, the most important part of the savings comes from the new generations that are starting to work at the public sector today that will enter to the new system. So in a sense, the assumption of the proportion of workers that take the recognition bond or the proportion of workers that do not take the recognition bond obviously have an important effect, but compared to these 40% of savings, they represent a relatively small part of these savings. So basically, those are the broad numbers. Obviously, as the implementation of the reform progresses, we will be publishing the explicit numbers as we get important information regarding what you just said of the fraction of workers that are going either through option one, that is the recognition bond, or the second option, that is to stay within the current system with some parametric changes on this system that it's basically, I would say, the most important one, is to start increasing the retirement age by 1 year every 2 years of time that go by. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Benito Berber.
Hi. Good morning, Alejandro. Two questions. First, can you give us a little bit of color with respect to what the PRI is thinking with respect to the fiscal reform? They've been saying that they oppose taxing food and medicines, but could you are they willing to accept taxing some food or medicine? And that's one question. And the second one is, with respect to the pension system, after the fact that after the passage of the ISTE reform, I was expecting that maybe some other systems would also be reformed, such as Pemex and the CFE or systems in the local states. Has there been any progress on that front? Thank you so much.
Okay. Regarding the PRI, obviously we are not, I think I think it's not on our side to say exactly what they will be accepting or not. What I can say is that during the period that just finished in Congress, We had, I think, a very good working relationship with the main political parties in Congress, and I think several initiatives were passed in a relatively efficient way and with important discussions on, I think, the very important subjects for the Mexican economy. Obviously, the most important of them was the Easter reform, but I think there were also important legislation that was passed regarding the financial sector, especially regarding transparency and our system of like credit unions and savings and loans institutions. So I would say that there's a relatively good working relationship with Congress, the PRI included, but also the rest of the political parties, and that all of the political parties represented in Congress showed a very strong interest in working towards a fiscal reform. I think what we will have to work during these following weeks is to try to balance what is, let's say, technically desirable and what will be politically feasible. And obviously we will get more information on that as these negotiations progress. But I would say that at the end of the day, everybody recognized that we have to strengthen our income base to be able to have a much more solid state and solid public finances. And I think there's a good environment in Congress to work to accomplish a fiscal reform. And the details of this fiscal reform will eventually we will know them as these negotiations progresses and as we try to balance what technically is desirable and what the political system can actually deliver. On the second question that I think was on other pension systems, obviously the Issste pension system represents around half of the public sector, or around half of the net present value cost of public pension, of public sector pensions. So there are important public sector pension systems that are waiting to be reformed. However, obviously, this was the biggest one and the most important one, and what we expect is that as time goes by, these other systems will be depending on their financial situation, will eventually be migrating to systems, to capitalization systems, that on top of providing, I think, a very good movement towards the solvency of the pension systems, they also have important implications regarding labor market flexibility, as with the current defined benefit systems, the workers in these institutions will lose all or an important part of their pension benefits whenever they move from the public sector to the private sector, and moving to a capitalization system will actually make all these pension rights portable from one system to the other. So I think that gradually we will see this this movement. The Easter reform was passed a month ago, so within the context of important, let's say, changes in the operational structure of these enterprises that you mentioned, obviously pension reform is an important issue to make some of these companies more efficient, or at least to improve the financial situation of these companies, of state governments, of municipal governments, of some universities. So obviously, in the next few years, we will need as a country to continue this pension reform. But it's important to highlight that as a country, with the Easter reform, I would say that a significant, or the most significant part of our pension systems have already been reformed. I think in the 90s, the private sector workers' pension system was reformed, and we moved to a capitalization system. Now, around half of the public sector pension systems have been reformed, and what is left is these pension systems that you mentioned, that hopefully during the next few years, an important part of them will see a convergence towards the main pension system that it's now a pension system of a capitalization and individual account pension systems. Thank you.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Your next question comes from Louis Archinopoulos.
Thank you for hosting the call. What does the pension reform, the fiscal reform, mean for Pemex? I mean, you had the change in the regime that was introduced last year, and if this fiscal reform is successful, what would the changes at Pemex be, or what do you have in mind regarding that, given their challenges of keeping up production?
Pemex, I think by itself, it's a topic on its own, and I think the important thing with Pemex lies more on structural issues and operational issues more than on fiscal issues. Obviously, Pemex will be needing more resources for investment as Cantarell continues to decline and they have to move to deep waters to find new oil fields, and they have also are going to exploit oil fields that have a much higher cost of being exploited than Cantarell. So what we need in Pemex is to see a significant restructuring of the company, to make it a much more efficient company, to make it a state-owned company that reaches the standards of other state-owned companies that we see around the world. And in that process, obviously, it will be important to increase the capacity to invest of Pemex, and also to do this in a way in which its financial structure is not weakened. And it's important to highlight this because in the last 6 years, Pemex has been able to significantly increase its investment. I think the investment budget of Pemex in the last few years has been around $12 or $13 billion, and I think this is a very important increase from what we saw in the second half of the 90s. However, it will be important to generate important savings within the company and maybe to have an important additional space from budgetary income so that Pemex can invest more and rely less on debt and more on internal resources to finance these increases in investment. But I would highlight that the problems in Pemex are not only of a budgetary or fiscal nature. I think there are also important problems that need to be addressed in its efficiency. And I think we have seen in the last 15 or 20 years important examples of companies, of state-owned companies, that have significantly increased its efficiency, its standards, and I think we also need to start a process in Pemex by which we modernize this company so that by doing this we generate a significant increase in its efficiency and therefore a significant reduction in its cost structure. Thanks.
Thank you.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. There are no further questions at this time, sir.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you all for coming to this conference call. And as always, if you have any doubts or questions, we can be available either at the Investor Relations Office or at the Public Credit Union through our contacts and through our web pages. Thank you very much.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.